Hey everybody, this is Joel Hoekstra of Whitesnake, and you're listening to Sonic Perspectives.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another interview of Sonic Perspectives. I'm Rodrigo, and our guest today is Mr. Joe Hoekstra from Whitesnake Trans-Siberian Orchestra Chair and Joe Hoekstra's 13. Joe, great to have you with us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about your upcoming second album under the moniker Joe Hoekstra's 13, entitled Running Games. To me, it's a cut above the previous one, right? Don't you think?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that's up to the listener, I guess. I haven't got much feedback yet because the album's not out just yet. So I'm excited to see what people think. But that's great. That seems to be what people are saying.
Yeah, I think even the cover has a lot more detail, and it's a little bit more enticing, for lack of a better word, than the first one, right?
Oh, cool. Oh, thank you so much.
And I know you wrote all the songs and produced it, but having the same team of musicians from the first album probably had an influence on how this one came out, no?
Yeah, I wanted to have a consistent sound, the name. So from album to album, I don't want to just, you know, all of a sudden have it be a completely different sounding thing. So it was great to be able to have everybody back from the first album and try to maybe focus the sound a little bit more on this one in terms of not having the songs be as diverse as they were on the first one. So that was the goal. Basically, same formula, but just tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it seems a lot more focused now that you mention it, for sure. And you probably wrote these parts to suit Russell's range and everybody else's capabilities too, right? Or
yeah, I definitely write around the personnel. So lots of the riffs have space in it for Vinny to play. Vinny loves grooving to rhythms that have a little bit of space. Mm-hmm. So I tried to include plenty of those for him. And I definitely write around Russell's range and know what he can hit and what he can't hit and try and work it out. So, yeah, I definitely it always comes down to who the personnel is and try to write what's going to be a good sounding album with all of them.
Yeah. When it comes to songwriting, there's definitely a difference between writing for Whitesnake and doing your solo stuff. I imagine there's a lot less boundaries and constraints for your solo material, right?
Well, I just do a lot more of it when it's my stuff, obviously. So I'm writing not, you know, with Whitesnake, I write the guitar riffs. And even then, it's usually like the sections of the song that we need parts for. Like, hey, this song needs a bridge. Okay, how about this? Oh, yeah, I like that. Okay, cool. You know, that's a lighter load than like, hey, I'm going to write all the guitars, I'm going to write all the lyrics, and I'm going to write all the vocal melodies, like what the melody of the song should be throughout from the vocals. So, I just do a lot more writing on these.
Okay. And I remember you saying on the first album that the lyrics were rather personal. Was that the case this time as well when Running Games or not?
Yeah. I mean, always, because they're, you know, I mean, it's basically comes down to my lyrics. So yeah, of course, there's going to be, but I try to keep things vague so it's people can see their own meaning in these things too. I don't like to get so specific that it's, you know, people can only hear like your story. That's, you know, people want to hear their own story in songs, right?
Right. Totally. I understand. And I was speaking with Derek the other day before I heard the album, Derek Sherinian, and he said this is the best 80s album that wasn't released in the 80s. I guess there's a certain magic that comes from the music of that period, right?
I mean, I'm trying to write albums that are going to appeal to the fan base that I have at the time. You know, I mean, I'm known in that scene from playing in Night Ranger and Whitesnake and TSO. Yeah. So there's no point in me releasing a fusion album right now or a funk album or something. I mean, yeah, I could show that I could play all these different styles, but in terms of what I'm doing with it, it makes solid sense. Right. And I not that I don't enjoy it. This is the, you know, that's the style that I started with, you know, is that so. Yeah, but that's a good quote. I like that. I'll take it.
Yeah, my first impression of it upon my first few listens is that if Cobra Kai needed a soundtrack, this would be it. I don't know if you're familiar with the series, but it's like loaded with 80s stuff.
I can't bring myself to watch it yet. I keep seeing the preview on Netflix, and I haven't hit click yet. I don't know if I can.
All right.
I don't know if I can commit to that yet.
You get there eventually, I'm sure. One connector, I don't know if you made this connection, but Derek played with Brad Gillis at the beginning of his career. Did he tell you about that? It was his first, like, big break.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Brad has told me about that many a times, yes. And I've let Derek know. Brad likes to say he gave Derek his start. So I said, Derek, just so you know, Brad gave you your start. That's what he. That's the story.
Yeah.
And he said, and Derek said that was true. So, anyway, they're both good dudes, you know. I had such a good time with Gillis playing a Night Ranger with him. We were, you know, big brother, little brother for that time period. We had a lot of fun.
Right.
And Derek is just killer on the albums and killer with everything he does. You know, great sounds and you know, so fast. I think he recorded this whole album in like, you know, a day and a half or something crazy.
Wow.
And it was unbelievable. Yeah, he just went on like this, you know, this binge, man, where he just went like nonstop and it was done in like a day and a half. I was like, dude, thank you. That's incredible.
Amazing. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Tell me about Finish Line. It's the first song I think that was revealed. I really love the video he did, and it kind of adds the whole dimension to the song as well. It builds up to what it represents.
So the first single was Hard to Say Goodbye. That's
okay.
People can check that out on YouTube as well, the audio of it. And then Finish Line is the first like video. So we decided to go the route of the animation video for it rather than doing like the 10 millionth quarantine video that people are doing right now.
Yeah.
And green screening everything. Yeah. So it's always something I've wanted to do, actually. I love animation. And I think Wayne Joyner did a really cool job with it. I just kind of gave him a loose idea of a storyline. And he rolled with it. And he did a killer job, I think.
Yeah. And my favorite song is the one you just mentioned, Hard to Say Goodbye. Before you comment on that, I must say that I sent this song to a friend of mine, like, in the morning. Mm-hmm. And, like, I got this text at 10 p.m. He goes, dude, what did you do to me? That's the only song I've listened the whole day. It's like crack cocaine. I can't get past it, you know?
Oh, that's funny, man. Yeah, that one was... melody first, you know, that's one of those songs I wrote walking around on the road. So I think I was in Japan with Whitesnake and just out for a walk around Tokyo and started singing that song in my head and kind of wrote it that way. And then I remember just laying down the demo when we were in Vienna eventually, you know, just going down like, okay, these are the guitars, here's the melody. And then just seemed like a perfect opportunity to use the song.
Another one I'm curious about is How Do You, which is almost like a waltz. This one has a distinctive quality to it.
That's a combination of a lot of things, that song. I don't know exactly, you know, that's another one of those kind of like Until I Left You off the first album where it's kind of like the pop world kind of mashed into hard rock and kind of like some of the stuff is kind of like, you know, the second riff I think is very Alex Lifeson-y too. So it has a little bit of like my Rush influence or Andy Summers influence too, to a degree. So there's a lot of different things happening with that one. But yeah, cool. Thanks. I'm glad you like that one. That's you know, I like the chorus in that one a lot.
Yeah. And on the heavier side of things, we have Take What's Mine, which is almost metal. Like you're flirting with the metal a little bit on that one. It's another high point for me as well.
Yeah. That, I think, I want to say I wrote that backstage with Whitesnake, the riffs.
Mm.
Maybe not all of the riffs, but like three of them or something like that. I think we were in Russia. Remember being backstage.
Jeez.
So you can tell I did a lot of touring, right?
All the places
that, but well, like that one was written in Tokyo and this one's in Russia or whatever. I'm not trying to show off. I'm just telling the story. But yeah, I remember coming up with those riffs backstage.
Right. Cool. Yeah. And what caught my attention, I mean, throughout the album is how powerful and strong the choruses are. And I think Russell makes every word count when he belts it out. And having Jeff Scott Soto on backing vocals really add another layer of awesomeness. It's like the cherry on the cake, right?
Yeah, I call Jeff the most overqualified background vocalist of all time. I mean, he's obviously a great vocalist. I mean, we're just friends, man. So he helps me out, and I think it's really a cool thing to hear their two voices together. Jeff, I mean, Jeff is like Derek in that he's really quick. I mean, you give him like a song, he'll turn it around that day for you, and he'll have layered harmonies happening everywhere. It's amazing, wow. You know. And he just, you know, what about this? What about this? And you know. He's fast, and he does an amazing job with it. So, and their voices just sound great together, man. Russell and Jeff have a cool blend.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Two great singers, not a surprise, right?
Of course. Yeah. Now it's amazing how many combinations of bands you have on this album, because Jeff and Derek are in a band. Tony Franklin played with Derek on Planet X. Vinny played in, I don't know, a gazillion bands as well. And Jeff, you know, he's been everywhere. So, there's a dozen bands represented on a single album. It's crazy. Tony's played in Whitesnake as well. Right?
Tony's a Whitesnake veteran, man.
Yeah. And I like how you end the album with the moodier track, which also names it. Tell me about that one.
So that one I wrote after the fact. It was like I had the two bonus tracks are also kind of like mid-tempo rockers. And I went, you know, I got like this album has a lot of mid-tempo hard rockers. And I went, it could almost stand to have one like legitimate ballad, because I mean, How Do You is like about as close as it came to it. I thought, It could have something like that. And I thought I could maybe do one with like strings and percussion. And so I just picked up my acoustic and I, cause I had the title for the album already in my mind, Running Games. Mm. And I decided I just wrote the song then after the fact. And I got Lenny Castro to play percussion on it. Cool. Thank goodness. I know Steve Lukather a bit, so I could get Lenny's contact info. I saw him play with Joe Bonamassa and I was like, nice. Awesome. I want to work with him someday. And so very excited to have Lenny on there, and Tony did bass on there, but that's like the only song on there without Derek, and it doesn't have Vinny on there, you know.
Okay. So
it's just percussion and bass and strings. My friend Dave Egger played the cello on there for me, and just a cool way to tie it all together. That seemed to, because I had already had the album title in my mind, it ties everything together. I thought that was like the glue for the album in a weird way, even though it's different than the other songs.
No, it does capture everything well and ends up on a high note for sure. And I know you did a few instrumental albums in the mid-2000s, right? For the most part, they were instrumental. Do you have any intention of doing something similar to those albums in the future or not?
I don't know. I mean, not right now. It doesn't make sense right now. I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. You never know, because you never know where life is going to take you. I'm in the hard rock scene right now. So it makes the most sense for me to be doing this. I think next up would probably be another Joel Hoekstra's 13. And I have my project with Michael Sweet and Nathan James. And so I'll be working on that. Kind of like sticking in the rock world for a bit. You never know, though.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll be honest with you. I first heard about you when you were leaving Night Ranger to join Whitesnake. You had your big break kind of later in the game compared to other peers who in their mid-20s seem to have it all figured out, right? Can you tell me a little bit about what led you to that big break?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I ever had like a big break. It was like a series of breaks that for me, I mean, I went from, see what happened with me is I went to GIT like 90, 91, right? So I was going out there with Chops and I was young and although, I mean, I wasn't really ready to become somebody, but I guess maybe in the back of my mind, I thought, I'll go out to Hollywood and all, you know. But as soon as I got out, Nirvana hit, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit came out. And that was the end of any of that. So it was
horrible
like,
timing. Yeah.
Wow, this is, you know, but it ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I needed to learn to make a living with my guitar and learn to play a lot of different styles. And it just led me on a very interesting path to get where I am today. So, I mean, I would say, like, you know, the stuff that made a difference, Chicago, joining Kathy Richardson's band, and that led to doing Love, Janis, which brought me out to New York, which was a theater piece about Janis Joplin, because Kathy played Janis in the show, and also knowing Jim Peterick back in Chicago, where I grew up and playing in his band, and that led to Night Ranger because Kelly Kagi was always a guest on his world stage shows. So getting to know Kelly through that, and also Kelly was also doing scrap metal with the Nelsons, and so you know, it was kind of like Jim's world stage, Jim Peterick's world stage, scrap metal, Night Ranger, Love Janice, and being in New York kind of led to Rock of Ages. Through me being in the theater scene a bit. And I would say being in Rock of Ages really helped me get TSO. And then being in Night Ranger really helped me get Whitesnake, I feel like. So just all these things just kind of kept evolving. And I would say, you know, oddly enough, the Whitesnake thing is what led to being with Cher, too, because that's Justin Derrico, the guitar player for The Voice and Pink, recommended me for that. And he's got a rehearsal spot right where Whitesnake rehearses. So we, you know, ended up hanging out a little bit. And so I think really through that in a weird way, that happens. So all these things just kind of roll into, you know, different situations.
I see. And I know you played cello and piano when you were young. Can you tell me if that affected at all your compositional skills or how you developed in guitar later on? Or
I mean, I think growing up in a house with music happening all the time and classical music, so music on a high level is good for you. It definitely helps you develop pitch and time.
Yeah.
So learning how to read when I was young, read music, that is. I think all that stuff helped because when I learned a power chord, I could just kind of, oh, you mean I just move this around and there's all the songs that I'm listening to?
Yeah,
great. You know, and then, so I could already figure out songs because my ear was good enough to lead me to the right pitch. So. I like to say it accelerated things, you know, like, then if I just would have started guitar at 11, it definitely helped me get moving with that.
I see. And speaking a little bit about your other gig, there's big news from Whitesnake with the blues compilation coming out, in February. Are there any other plans to record a new album or anything in the cards at the moment?
Nothing I've heard of. I mean, you know, we're just hanging tight, man, waiting for David to put the bat signal in the sky and then we'll all come running, you know? I mean, definitely honored to be still working with David and, like, you know, whatever he's got in mind works for me, man. So just excited to be a part of the band, and he's a good dude and I like all the guys in the band. So looking forward to doing more with those guys for sure.
Okay. And if we can talk a little bit about TSO for a minute, to me, the show has kind of transcended hard rock and metal, and it now turned into like a family tradition every year, right? I mean, how far ahead do you start planning next year's show, and how do you manage to make it so inventive and fresh every year?
The production team, they work throughout the year. I mean, like, as far as production design, like, you know, designing a stage and designing a light show, and those guys are working on that all year. Now, as far as the music goes, I think the music directors give us a song list, not a set list, because lots of the songs don't make the show. I'd say maybe we end up playing 2/3 of them or something like that. We get a song list about a month before we get to rehearsals, which is the very end of October usually. So usually, like, you know, figure the top of October, here's your song list. So everybody at home starts brushing up and going through stuff and making sure you're on top of the ones we're going to need to know. And then you rehearse for 2.5 weeks and then you're off and running, man, you know, and burn through extremely intense tour in the matter of, like, about, I guess, 8 weeks, something like that. Seven, 8 weeks.
Intense. I spoke with Chris Caffrey, I think 2018, and he mentioned they were sort of considering making this like a throughout the year stuff, not just in the holiday period, but, you know, changing it up a little bit to adapt to different seasons and whatnot. But I guess it hasn't happened yet. But I guess there's a plan for that.
Yeah, I mean, TSO, that for me is like Whitesnake, where, you know, when they're ready, I'm there, you know. But I have very little to do with, you know, what's going to happen with it. It's just, you know, I'll be there when something's going to go down. But, you know, it's a big band and big organization, man. You know, management does an amazing job. Those guys are super smart and always have good plans. So, I just kind of, you know, fall in line and do my best for them, man.
Right. Sure. And I guess, well, we mentioned Cher. Any plans with Cher at the moment? I guess, you know, she can't tour or anything like that, right? So.
Yeah, not really. I mean, you never know what'll happen down the road, but no, there's nothing doing right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the common thread between, you know, Whitesnake, TSO, and Chair is that all these acts are like massive theatric endeavors. What would you say is the most important thing you learn from these masses of performance and this, like, these massive productions?
Well, I would say you can't ever be too specific about where life is going to take you. So I think the best thing to do is just do the best you can at every turn, because sometimes you'll end up doing things you never would have thought you'd do in your life. You know, right. I never would have thought I'd be playing in Rock of Ages, like a Broadway show. I was not sitting there as an 11-year-old playing Black Sabbath songs going, someday I'm going to be on Broadway, you know, but it changed my life for the better. I mean, for sure. You know, it totally changed my whole career trajectory, all the people I got to meet and the money, and, you know, changed my scene as far as being a struggling guitar player versus a guy with some money in the bank and some gigs. And then, you know, same thing with Cher with that. I mean, when you're playing AC/DC and Black Sabbath and you're a kid, you're not going, someday I'm going to play with Cher, you know?
Never.
But
yeah.
you can never tell where life is going to take you, man. You just work hard. But those things, you know, are huge blessings, man, you know, when you get there and you have the opportunity to do them. So it shows you the value of hard work and just keeping an open mind. You know, don't just pick out one thing and go, I want to play with that person or this, you know, band. It doesn't work like that. You know,
you have to
spread out, give yourself lots of opportunities and work hard at all of them and see which ones open up.
Right. Good advice right there. Yeah. Last question for me. I know that 13, like the moniker 13, is designed as a studio effort, but is there a chance that these songs are presented in a live setting someday, or?
Well, we did one show on the Monsters of Rock cruise in support of Dying to Live, and it went really well, man. I mean, we packed the theater and people loved it. It was it's a cool set to play, because then you got Vinny back there playing drums so he can play some Dio. He got me in the band so he can do some Whitesnake. And so you get Vinny Appice playing Whitesnake. It's kind of cool, you know. Like you got this kind of cool mix of stuff. And everybody takes a solo. It's kind of like a Whitesnake show with that, where everybody gets their moment in the sun. And so, it went over really well. And you never know. Never know. I mean, I'd love to do some live shows with it. But, of course, there's, you know, we got a pandemic going on. And as soon as we get the world open, everybody's going to want to get out with their bands. So
I think so, yeah. I was talking to Wolf Hoffman from Accept the other day. And I told him everybody's going to want a tour. And there's probably going to be like a massive combinations of, I don't know, 3 or 4 acts touring together, or massive tour combos, right? So I'm excited for that if and when it happens. So.
Me too. I know. I'm not counting the chickens before they're hatched, and I'm not sitting around just like, you know, oh, hopefully someday either. I'm extremely busy right now, working really hard, and like, you know, that just because we're not out touring doesn't mean you can't work hard as a musician. So that's just that's just one area of what we do, you know. So important to remember that. So it's not all that bad. It's bad. I mean, I haven't had a period like this where I haven't been on stage in my whole life. I mean, not since I, you know, was a teenager, maybe. And even then, I mean, I think I'd have to go back all the way to being like maybe 14 years old or something, this Jesus. Long without performing, you know?
Yeah.
So a long, long, long time that I haven't been on a stage in 10 months or something like crazy like that. So,
anyway.
Yeah, insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you put out this album to keep us entertained during the pandemic, man. Thank you so much for that.
It needed to happen, dude. Needed to happen.
Yeah. And well, thank you so much for your time. I hope it's not too long until you're able to tour.
Thanks, man. Yeah, me too. Fingers are crossed. Like nobody's been. I'm going to cement them like this until we get
absolutely. Back. Yeah. All right. Cheers, Joe. Thank you so much, man.
All right. Cheers, brother. Thank you so much.
Care. Okay, everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this interview with Joe Hoekstra. As always, you can check it out on many formats: YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. Also, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Let's wrap it up with the song Hard to Say Goodbye from the new album of Joe Hoekstra's 13, Running Games. Stay safe and keep rocking!